Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
Your podcast for you.
About antiques.
And freaks.
What antiques are we talking about this week?
So, I was trying to figure out for, I would say, a disturbingly long time, how to broach the subject of bottles. Because here's the thing, it's big. There's a lot to do with bottles.
Do tell me about the bottles.
There's a lot of them, actually.
At least four?
There's at least, I would say, five bottles.
Damn.
Maybe 10.
Oh my god.
But bottles being, like, the number one way we put stuff in and carried it around.
Liquids particularly.
Not just those. But yeah, like, it's daunting. And I was, like, beating my head against a wall trying to figure out, like, how the hell do I talk about this? And then I realized, oh, I don't know, 2 years later, that I you break it down into manageable chunks.
They already did poison bottles.
Well, I caught an article on Antiques Trader, and I thought, well, that's a bottle.
No, dude, that's an article.
That's my stunning... Oh, my God. Oh, shoot, shut the podcast down. I've made a fucking horrible mistake. Bitters bottles. It's just specific enough that I can talk about it without wanting to cry or sitting here for 4 hours. So, Ken, do you know what bitters are?
They are something you add to alcohol because it's just too pleasant otherwise.
Nice.
But bitters.
So bitters are actually more than just stuff to make liquor taste like shit.
Yeah?
Sort of. Here's the thing. They were actually just liquor that tasted like shit themselves.
Okay, so we started out with liquor that tasted like shit, and we said to ourselves, you know what we should do? We should add this to more liquor.
Yes.
So it's not, we don't add bitters to liquor because liquor tastes too good. We add liquor to bitters because it makes the bitters better?
Yes.
Amazing.
But let's rewind. Let's rewind a minute.
Amazing.
Because the bitters history is actually way older than that. Because bitters were originally just medicine. Listed on Wikipedia as an alcoholic and botanical or herbal liquid preparation sold as a patent medicine, very often as a panacea.
Oh.
Or cure-all, if you're not familiar with that Latin.
I know what that means because of Golden Sun.
Dumb dork. Wow, what a deep cut. You just went back to the... You just rocking me back to 1991, and you were like, I played Golden
Sun.
1991,
the furthest into the past we've gone on our antiques podcast.
We've never gone farther. I'm scared. What's older than Golden Sun?
Nothing.
Very few things.
Golden Sun made the world.
I love Golden Sun.
It's very good. Anyway, bitters.
So, bitters actually go back probably to the entirety of history.
Because, the whole thing?
Yeah. Well, the first evidence we have of it is the ancient Egyptians.
Ooh,
as
very
it so
good.
Often is, where you would find recipes and occasionally like remnants of a lot of heavy herbs mixed in with wine.
Mm.
And you could still drink it. Don't.
Wait, what? Are you telling me that if I find wine in an ancient Egyptian tomb, I shouldn't drink it?
They won't let me eat the cheese, so you can't have the wine. I'm sorry.
What about the bog butter? Can we eat the bog butter?
Let's eat the bog butter.
Okay.
So, ancient Egypt, probably older than that, because for as long as human history, we've been trying to fix problems with plants.
By which we mean fix medical issues within our bodies with plants.
Yeah.
And not identify plants as having problems that we should fix.
Thank you for clarifying, but I like my sentence better because it's much more whimsical.
Listen, someday we're going to get a listener that's as overly literal as I am, and I want to make sure they're not confused.
It's fine. If you are, I respect that, and I'm sorry for the way I am. Some of those herbs include bark in general, cascarilla, cassia, gentian root, orange peel and lemon peel come up a lot, conchina bark, also known as quinine, angelica root, thistle, golden seal, wormwood leaf, and that is a very small list because it conceivably could be anything.
So with that cocktail, you could get rid of parasites, cure your scurvy, and also your malaria?
Yeah. So you did pick up on that some of those are actual medicinals.
Yes.
Some of them are not. But so, you know, this is rooted in a real trial and error medicine. And they came back into favor around the Middle Ages, when people started studying plants for medicine with greater urgency and with more concentrated effort. Herbal tonics that were mixed with alcohol at first, just so the alcohol would draw out the properties and preserve the tonic. Tonic.
The tonic.
Tonic. Or tincture. I got wrapped up trying to say tonic and tincture at the same time. Tonkture.
The tonkture.
the Teenik.
They tonctured him.
Thank you. And since these tended to taste like absolute garbage, they were, as the name implies, incredibly bitter most of the time, they were mixed with even more alcohol to make them taste not as bad. As we covered a little earlier.
I still can't believe I was right about that.
Yeah, that was that was great. I like when you get those in like one take.
Oh, God.
Some of the things that bitters would start to and go on for what I'm going to call an embarrassingly long time claim to cure include, and I've included this list just because it's funny, liver illness, headache.
Wait, sorry. We're curing our liver illness with alcohol that we've added alcohol to make it taste better?
Yes.
Okay, please move on with the list.
Headache. Now, do you know what biliousness is? Because I totally forgot to look that one up.
It's when you have bile.
So livers again, huh?
Well, they didn't really know why the bile was doing anything. And you can have bile from more than your liver. Other organs produce bile.
True. Indigestion, poor appetite, fever, ague. Do you know what ague is? I don't. Forgot to look that one up too.
It is a diagnosis that comes up a lot in my Victorian research, but I don't actually know what it's referring to.
Uh-oh, Google time.
We could just move on with our lives.
Oh, okay.
Like, collectively.
Tell me if you know what ague is. coughing. Palpitations, jaundice, which is, all, you know, we're going right back to, hey, fix your cirrhosis with my alcohol, imbalanced humors, diarrhea, constipation at the same time, which is how you know it works.
Hey, doesn't Pepto-Bismol do the same thing?
Shush.
It goes both ways.
Colic, and my absolute favorite cure-all, the antidote for alcohol.
So is this like the OG hair of the dog?
I think it might be the OG hair of the dog. It's just like, well, you're hungover, and I know what will absolutely, unquestionably make you feel better. Get drunk again. A principle I adhered to for years.
Oh, no.
The other thing about mixing bitters in with liquor, other than making them possible to be drank without immediately vomiting, was that it did provide the illusion that it did literally anything. Because you did feel better, because you were drunk. My favorite bitter bottle of all time is definitely, it's later, obviously, than the Middle Ages, but it was Greeley's Bourbon Bitters, who did not claim to be a medicine very much at all, but instead said, quote, all the nourishing and invigorating properties of bourbon whiskey.
Accurate.
So they didn't lie. They just said, this will make you feel about as good as whiskey always does. It was also frequently later used as preventative medicine. Was this an excuse to drink? Yeah, probably. Eventually, in a year, in the 1860s, in 1862 to be exact, the mixture of bitters with liquor got called the cocktail for the first time in possibly history.
We've invented the cocktail.
We've invented the cocktail. And bitters were popularized in Jerry Thomas's landmark mixology book, How to Mix Drinks, or The Bon Vivant's Companion. There's a lot of other reasons why bitters took off in the year 1860 through the 1900s.
Is it because the Civil War was on and everyone was like, I need to drink to get through this?
You got it!
Oh my God.
You know what else was happening at the same time? The temperance movement.
Oh.
Who, if I recall correctly, were blaming the Civil War on the fact that everyone was drinking.
They were blaming everything on alcohol.
Yeah.
Everything. Everything.
So, even if the temperance movement wouldn't move until much, much, much later into actual prohibition, for a while and in a lot of communities, drinking was considered very poor behavior. But could anyone really judge you for drinking your medicine? This is for my liver, Kathy.
Look, Cheryl, this is for my health.
This is prescription bourbon. It says here it has all of the effects of bourbon. That's my absolute favoriteest true fact about bitters of all time is that literally they pumped up the alcohol content to roughly 50% and sometimes more. But since it was still a medicine, you could drink it. It's just in public and all the time. And since they were frequently taken as preventative medicine, any time is okay. You didn't have to be sick to be drinking it.
Who needs to wait till 5 to take their medicine?
And what's more, as a medicine, it couldn't be put under the sin taxes, which made it cheaper than beer and alcohol and liquor of all stripes once temperance really started getting going.
God, can you imagine a world where your prescriptions are cheaper than alcohol?
Yeah, oh, man. I would like that.
That'd be great.
Oh, no. So, because they were neither subjected to the sin tax or any other tax, actually, they because there were medicines, they weren't, you couldn't apply revenue taxes to them either. So people, what they did with this is they made them more expensive. Because you get, now you're getting a perfect storm of producing it and selling it costs you very little, and everyone really wants to have it because it's the only socially acceptable way to drink right now.
So your profit margin is fucking huge.
Out the roof. and possibly to justify the expense of it, or maybe just because everyone was feeling super frisky, Bitters bottles got really whimsical.
Yes.
I have a list of some of the shapes.
Excellent, excellent, excellent.
And until 1906, when the Pure Food and Drug Act was passed, Bitters eventually became just for cocktails. Because finally, it took them 1906 years to figure out that just drinking bourbon wasn't medicine.
Disagree.
You might recognize the Food and Drug Act as being a predecessor of the FDA, meaning that the U.S. was actually starting to look at stuff that was being sold as medicine and going, hey, you can't just give that to people.
You can't just give whiskey to infants.
Yeah, it was largely in response to giving opioids to infants. I actually would prefer the whiskey.
Which is worse for infants?
Opioids by a landslide, my dude.
I don't fucking know.
You can put a little whiskey on Junior's gums, but you put a little crack cocaine on Junior's gums, and he's gonna have way more problems.
Crack cocaine is not an opioid.
No, it's not. You're right. I'm sorry. It's a stimulant. How did I fuck that up? I love drugs.
Rose loved drugs.
Rose loved drugs. Heroin is an opioid. So, you know, would you rather someone rub whiskey on your toddler's gums or heroin? You're taking too long to think about that.
Do I look like I know how babies work?
That's true. For all I know, like, heroin is like a super healthy baby potion.
It's really not. I can guarantee that much. No, I was actually trying to figure out the concentration of opioids in laudanum versus the concentration of opioids in heroin. Heroin's much more.
Yeah.
It's several more.
Yeah, I think it's like at least four more.
No one was giving babies heroin. They were giving babies laudanum.
Yeah, because it wasn't as much as heroin. And they were like, well, that's fine then.
Yeah, exactly. So it's probably fine.
Well, it's just like you give the baby a finger of whiskey. Obviously, he's not going to be slamming back highballs with you. But a finger of whiskey is fine.
This is why I don't babysit.
So that's pretty, like, quick, dirty, and ignoring a lot of nuance and change over time of bitter bottles.
The end.
And I'm not going to talk to you about this anymore. Goodbye.
Sources for this episode include...
me telling you to shut up. So, now that I've talked about bitters bottles, I want to... I do have a list of shapes you might find them in.
Yes, give me the shapes.
Some shapes you might find. Racism.
No, I don't like these shapes. Put them back. Take them back. I don't want them.
Sorry.
I don't want racism shapes.
This is my least favorite cereal. You know, Lucky Charms just put in the unicorns, and it's just like we're all kind of like sucking the insides of our cheeks waiting for the next announcement.
Now we're gonna get emails from people who consider Lucky Charms to be racist against the Irish.
I'm really sorry, because that might actually be a pretty good point. Well, unfortunately, I would say a good over half of the human figurals represented in the bottles are just racist caricatures.
God damn it.
Log cabins. Let's get away from racism for a second. Fish. Barrels. Not together. Most of a George Washington.
But if the fish and the barrels were together, we could shoot them.
Yes. Yes, I rather got that.
Do you get it?
I got it.
It's
yeah.
A pun on a common idiom.
Like doing shots of fish in a barrel.
Yes.
Oh, shit, now it's a good product.
So George Washington.
Most of a George Washington.
Most of him.
Yeah, like from the neck up.
We call that a head.
It's a bust.
What? No, if it's D, Loki went over this. The neck is part of the head.
Don't you talk Marvel Comics to me,
sir. I'm talking Norse myth to you.
Don't you talk Norse myth to me, sir.
Not all the myths are comics canon, D. They still haven't come down definitively on the Sleipnir issue.
For one thing, he doesn't have red hair.
Oh, that might actually be a conflation with a completely different god. Well, it's hard to tell because we have, like, 6 pages of Norse myth, like, as a historical record. It's basically equivalent to having, like, 3 sentences from the Bible and basing the entire religion off of that.
I love the idea that it might have just been some guy. And, like, just, like, it's fan fiction, and that's all we know. I was about to cut in with, like, I'm pretty sure not everything in the prose Edda is canon, so, like...
Anyway, bitters.
Most of a George Washington. This bottle's unusual because for some reason they put the pouring spout on the bottom, which is a cool way to do it.
So you're just drinking bitters out of George Washington's neck?
Yeah.
Was this bottle made for vampires?
It was actually made for, like, a bicentennial of some sort that I couldn't be arsed to care about.
Yeah, the Vampire's Bicentennial Ball,
Bicentennial Ball, where they finally tear down the masquerade.
Paper faces on parade.
Corn! Because everything should be shaped like corn.
Why is it always corn?
At Brimfield, I fought with myself to not buy a corn jug.
I'm glad you mastered your impulses.
It was a beautiful corn jug, and she was like, 25? I'm like, I don't have anything to do with a corn jug, but I want a corn jug. A tree. A house different from a log cabin. Pigs. Specifically the Cape May Lighthouse and no other. A ball and claw made by none other than Ball and Claw Bitters.
I want that one. It will go great with my furniture.
That's actually one of the most commonly reproduced ones.
Oh, motherfuckers.
I don't know if that was excitement or...
Both.
They also came in a variety of colors that will get very confusing very quickly because all different colors would relate to different makers. While I was skimming to make sure the shit that I thought about was correct, which is how a lot of my research goes, where it's like, wait, I know this, and then I go, I'm not sure I know this. I saw so many conflicting people saying things like, well, amber's the rarest color. Well, cobalt's the rarest color. Trick question, there's no rarest color unless you're talking about a specific make.
Purple.
That is a rare color for everything because we didn't have the color, the tint for it.
So I've done it.
You've done it.
I've solved bitters.
Well, you actually just hit on a good way to spot a reproduction, but you did something.
Finally, I can rest.
You keep jumping ahead in my notes.
Sorry.
So, some of the most collectible ones we have. Berkshire bitters. Drake's Plantation bitters, but only if they're in colors other than amber. Bourbon whiskey bitters. My favorite, the ones that did not lie about just being bourbon. Brown celebrated Indian herb bitters, notably not a Native American. Dingin's Napoleon cocktail bitters. Dr. Fish's bitters. Guess which one was the fish bottle? Greeley's bourbon whiskey bitters. Harvey's Prairie bitters. Horseshoe bitters. Jackson's Stonewall bitters. Jacob's Cabin tonic bitters. Which feels very much like the eBay SEO when you type in like punk, goth, cyberpunk, rave.
Victorian Art Nouveau.
Yeah, Victorian Art Nouveau steampunk. Kelly's Old Cabin bitters, which are different from the other cabin bitters. McKeever's Army bitters, which notably was not the bitters the Army used.
Of course the Army used bitters.
National bitters. General Scott's Artillery bitters, which is, like, really fucking cool. Simon's Centennial bitters. Steinfeld's French Cognac bitters. Traveler's bitters and Warner's Safe bitters are some of the rarer and most desirable brands. Remember what I said about there being a lot of bottles out there? If you don't want to go specific, this is one of those oddballs where age isn't, like, linearly related to desirability, because there are some from the 20s through the 40s that are still pretty desirable, even though they kind of lost their luster as being a medicine at that point. But generally, anything before 1906, when bitters were still medicine, are the, like, absolute cream of the crop. Another thing you want to look for is unusual colors, but I'm going to keep saying this. That is going to vary depending on what you're looking for and at. There are some colors that are naturally rarer, for example, pinks, and what you would call purple, which is a little bit more of a cornflower. You are going to have to get to know individual pieces to figure out if a color is rare or not. But generally, when you look at, like, I think amber is across the board, tends to be the most common color. Which is, I found a website that said amber was the rarest color, which blew my fucking mind. Because, like, no. It's not. Stop.
But it is the color of your energy.
I can't believe you would do this to our podcast.
on that for like half an hour. I hope I you can't. Realize.
I why couldn't you have sat longer? Possibly until my death.
Well, now that Dee's quit the podcast,
I'm over it now. I do have some examples, because I always have examples. Greeley's Bourbon Bitters came commonly in copper, amber, yes, those are two different colors. It's the color of your energy. Puce, purple, and pink. While, for this specific bottle, green, aqua, and straw yellow are incredibly rare. Tippecanoe Bitters came most commonly in clear, aqua, and amber, so any color other than that would be rare. You're kind of seeing, like, what I'm talking about, where Tippecanoe, common aqua, Greeley's, super rare aqua. So there really isn't any consistency. Drake's Plantation, pretty much any color other than amber. Drake's Plantation will come up a lot because it was everyone's favorite and continues to be as a collectible. I don't know why.
I don't want it to be because of the plantation.
There's no plantation actually involved. Drake's Plantation was from, like, the Midwest, and I don't think the guy even owned a farm.
Was Uncle Tom's Cabin on a plantation?
I don't know.
One of these days, one of us is going to have to read that book.
I've read it, like, twice.
Have you really?
And none of it stuck.
Well, good thing we fought a war over it.
I'm so sorry, everyone involved.
Harriet Beecher Stowe spinning in her grave.
This is a sidebar, but I was looking at the Drake's Plantation bottle, and I couldn't help but notice the horrifying detail that the cabin lacks doors or a window. There's no way in, and there's no way out. It's a tomb or a cell for something or someone.
Oh my god. Fuck.
Broke, porcelain dolls are haunted. Woke, Drake's Plantation bottles are absolutely containing an evil spirit.
Shit.
It's really chilling when you like, hey, wait. You're supposed to be able to get in and out of a house. Dr. Fish's Bitters, which is in guess what shape?
A whale.
Yeah, no, it's a fish. Like a regular fish.
Whales are fish.
Okay, Ishmael. Sure. Whales are fish.
I'm so glad you came with me on that one.
I'm Queequeg here. Just gritting my teeth. For Dr. Fish's Bitters, you get amber, dark green, clear, golden amber, dark amber, and other colors being rarer. Shapes in general, like the figural bottles, anything depicting a thing that isn't specifically a bottle, are also, in general, very collectible.
Such as the fish in the cabins?
No, you could also collect the racism, specifically the Cape May Lighthouse.
I don't want to collect the racism.
A tree, pig.
Pigs is good.
A lady's leg.
Interesting.
A lot of choices being made. Then you could get into a lot of other fun stuff, like Western Bitters bottles are really very, very collectible and considered prized. When I say by Western, I mean Western territory, Wild West. They weren't really doing a lot of manufacturing out there.
No, on account of there being no, like, factories out there.
Yeah, they were busy intermittently stealing land and then dying on the land they stole. So they didn't have a lot of time to, like, make commerce happen. A lot of people think those are really cool. They tend to have some of the most bonkers names. And you can get into fun stuff like there are people who collect only figural bitters bottles or only labeled bitters bottles. I actually fall in the label camp myself.
Because the paper rarely survives to the present day.
That is a major draw. I also just like seeing the illustrations, and the older you get, the bonkers medical claims are incredibly fun.
I do really enjoy some old-timey labels.
Yeah, like imagine Dr. Bronner's, but every bottle you find is like that.
Oh, God. Is that why he is the way he is?
Probably.
If you've never read the text on a Dr. Bronner's bottle, set aside an afternoon or seven.
Oh, my God. Get some Starbucks and sit down in the Target and just enjoy.
All one.
It's terrifying.
It is absolutely terrifying.
It's like House of fucking Leaves.
It's just very on Lord of the Rings. It's something.
It's something. So, some of the most common bottles, which I think is a fun place to look because these are also the cheapest, because this is one of my favorite subjects, an antique that really spans the gamut in value. Atwood's Jaundice Bitters. Absolutely, I think I'm still tripping over them from time to time. And I don't collect bitter bottles. Dr. Baxter's Mandrake Bitters. Doyle's.
Sorry, what?
I told you the names are like...
That one, okay. That one's my favorite until I hear the next one that is my favorite.
I think I'm going to guess which one's going to be your favorite.
Okay.
It might not be for a while. All Doyle's right. Hop Bitters.
pretty good.
Drake's Plantation bitters in the plain amber, very common, if you want a cabin with no windows or door. Electric bitters! Winning now!
Oh no! Oh no.
Dr. Flint's Quaker bitters!
Wait, isn't electric bitters just Gatorade?
You got them. That's Gatorade, baby. If you peel back the label, it says Gatorade on the bottom. What are you talking about?
It tastes like shit and it has electrolytes.
Electrolytes are different from electricity.
Are they?
No. I guess when you, like, when you turn...
Is that not what allows your brain to carry the electricity from one cell to the next?
When you break energy down to its most basic components, I guess they're the same. Anyway. Goff's Herb Bit is Gatorade. Goff's Herb Bitters, Lashes Bitters, and Hostetter's Stomach Bitters. I don't know why it tickled me so to find out that the reason Hostetter's is one of the most common ones is because it was specifically an anti-diarrheal, and the Union Army ordered it by the boxcar.
Yeah, because despite von Steuben's best efforts, we never quite cottoned on to don't build your food camp downstream from your shitting camp.
It might have also had something to do with the fact that it was like 50% alcohol. And you could write it down as a national expense for medicine for the troops.
But everyone was also pooping themselves to death.
It was a lot. There was a lot going on. It's both. It's strong both reasons. So, I guess we will talk about what are you looking for to find these magical bottles. I do want to start with look at the bottle. What does it look like? I don't mean to be rude, but, you know, you could start by seeing that it's a bottle. And seeing that it's a bottle, bitters bottles do explicitly have to say bitters somewhere. Or had said it in the case of all that only have paper labels that might be missing and you can eventually identify it. But it had to at some point proclaim that it was bitters. Otherwise it's just medicine and it's not as cool.
Wow, rude.
Hey, I'm not saying it. All antiques are saying it.
Yeah? They're saying medicine bottles ain't shit?
Yeah, I called Sotheby's and they were like, fuck that. I hate it.
I think that might have just been because it was us calling.
it's weird. When I asked them about it, they said, please stop calling. Please. I don't know what you want. I'll give anything to make this stop.
Give to our Patreon.
Just don't hurt my family. which I thought was off topic. Some things you can look for include seams. For example, mold-blown bottles will have pontal marks of some sort, and three seams.
What's a pontal mark?
A pontal mark, funny you should ask, is a mark left on the bottom of a piece of glass from where it's broken off of the tube used to blow it.
Oh. Also, the name of my next D&D character.
Pontal?
Pontal mark.
That's a cute name, actually. I really want like a little kobold named Pontal mark.
It's gonna be a tiefling, because they're all tieflings.
It's always a tiefling. But pontal marks are really useful when you're talking about glass. Or at least older glass. Because a rough, jagged pontal is usually, like, hand-blown or mold-blown. So that's, you're talking in the early 1800s, but that'll span all the way to the 1900s. But there was a snap tool invented for specifically cutting pontal marks in around the 1820s. And you can kind of get a feel for that because it will look like a pontal mark, but smooth, actually, this time. It's rounded and indented and smooth, but not as smooth as a machined piece. That is regrettably not something I can teach you with words, but there's a diff. Insert the Goldfinch scene where I'm condescendingly running someone's hands across it. Actually, the bottom of bottles can tell you a lot about them, because 1855 to specifically 1875, people used key molds, which were a really confusing three-part mold that used more pressing than blowing. And you can tell because they have a weird semicircle imprinted on the bottom. They don't have pontal marks.
Oh.
In the 1900s, cup mold bases were used. Those are smooth with no marks, and you probably run into those more frequently. You can also look at the top of the bottle. What's that? I don't know what the top is called. Oh my god. I've talked so much about bottles, I don't know sticky outy bit you drink from is called.
The neck and the mouth?
Thank you. The neck and the mouth of the bottle can tell you a lot about it, but it can't tell you how to remember those two specific, incredibly simple terms because you're an idiot.
Now.
So, corks obviously, we tend to associate corks with being older, and we do that on purpose, because they are. Although, that can be a little tricky, because as if you drink wine, you know, we still use corks for a lot of things. Screw tops were invented in the 1800s.
Really?
Yeah, but nobody liked doing it because you had to do it by hand.
As opposed to a cork, which you could remove with your mind.
Okay, no, you don't, but you don't put the cork in with your... Listen, I don't know, we're gonna have a little contest, and I'm gonna have you fucking carve the tracks out for a screw top.
Oh, you mean they had to put the mechanism in by hand?
Yes, I'm sorry, I wasn't okay. Really clear about that.
I thought you meant they had to open it by hand, and I was gonna be like, I had some bad news for everyone.
Well, first of all, a cork, if you are careful, you can just smash against the tabletop. But that will get the cork stuck in there permanently. Don't ask me how I know that. So these did have to be, like, hand-tooled, so they didn't really catch on until the late 1800s, when machinery and machining became popular, and you could have that done mass-produced. The crown top, which is the trickiest by far because it is what most bottles still look like, has the neck and then an elongated part for the mouth.
Like a spout?
All the comparisons I have are awful, and I refuse to say them on air.
Okay. So it's penis-shaped.
Sort of. It gets thinner, but then it flashes out.
And, like a mushroom?
And gets thinner again. Yeah, like a like a dick. I don't know what to say, man.
So some bitters bottles have dicks on top. Okay.
Well, no, it's a lot of bottles have that because it's like a flanging of the neck for machinery to, like, adhere a cap on without using a screw.
Oh, so it gives the machine something to pull against.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Crown tops actually came around in the Victorian era, but much like screw caps, didn't catch on until we kind of had an easier way to adhere things than using a mallet. But that's the bottle that, when you have to use a bottle opener, it's that kind. Because they're not screwed on. And so those are some ways to get a really, really rough and unreliable sense of age. But if you don't like that, then I'm sorry, but you're gonna have to get used to it because collecting bottles is sort of just like this. Now, I did mention earlier that fake bottles are a problem. Because bottles are easy to make now and always have been.
Which is why we've used them for thousands of years.
Yeah, and also because bitters bottles, they just skyrocketed in popularity after a certain point, and so it became very lucrative to copy them. First things first, if it says Wheaton on the bottle, that is a fake. The Wheaton factory in New Jersey has been the bane of every bottle collector's existence since... Maybe they'll get their own episode. But Wheaton bottles are always fake. There are other obvious things you can go on. This might be relying a little bit more on experience, but you can get that experience. Glass clarity. Old glass looks old. I can't put it much better than that. Old things have use and wear and unevenness and flaws. Reproductions tend to be a little too perfect. There's that saying that if it's too good to be true, it is. Colors. A lot of fake bottles use colors that were absolutely impossible in the times that they were supposed to have been made.
Bright, purple.
Yeah, like purple. Bright pinks, bright purples, and blue is tougher because it's just shades of blue. For example, like, aqua bottles do tend to be more expensive for certain makes, but when they try to make the aqua, what they get is like a weird Tiffany blue. My problem is if you're not used to seeing the difference, you could fall for it pretty easily. So it's really important if you're looking at something to go with your gut and just kind of check and see if that was normal. Generally, it's a problem with vividness. Color science was never vivid. And they all have that sort of muddy tempera look to them. So that's important to go on. In general, quality. We've talked about this before. Repros look smoother, less detailed, and generally shittier. There also tends to be size differences because of shrinkage from casting and recasting. With bitters specifically, this was a tip that I kept running into that I had trouble believing because they said labels or inscriptions that have wild names.
Alright.
Yeah, like Zuzu or Captain Dan's Big Bad Bitters.
Ah.
I don't go with this because there is a real bitter bottle called La Cour's Sarsaparifer Western Bitters.
Ah, good old sarsaparilla.
Sarsaparifer?
Yeah.
Sarsaparifer.
Yes. My next tiefling.
That has to be a tiefling mage.
Yes.
So I don't, homie, don't play that.
No?
I don't think that you, if we were playing a game and you showed me three real bitters names and one fake one, I don't know that I would get it right. Because if you said La Cour's Sarsaparifer, I would be like, now you're just having me on. In general, just if there's a specific kind that you either run into or want to know more about, get to know the details on the originals. For example, the Fish's Bitters, which is shaped like a fish and is absolutely one of the most frequently reproduced bottles of all time. The real ones have, really tiny around the eye, the word Fish Bitters, but spelled like fish. I don't know. So Fish's Bitters was F-I-S-C-H.
Oh!
So it's like a funny joke.
I didn't know that this whole time because you were saying it out loud with your mouth and I never saw it spelled.
Yeah, I completely... I kind of took for granted that I knew how it was spelled.
Yes.
So it's called Fish's Bitters. It's a very funny joke. But around the eye of the fish, it says Fish's Bitters, F-I-S-H. I have no idea why, but it's a detail that gets left out on a lot of reproductions.
Ah.
So in this case, just knowing the material can be very helpful. I know everyone hates seeing that because it means you have to, like, go out and touch stuff and talk to people, but, like...
Gross.
That's antiques.
Unacceptable.
So, that's them's bitter bottles.
Them's bitters.
It's the bitter pill.
Does it leave a bitter taste in your mouth?
No, there's a very sweet taste.
Yeah?
Yeah. If you're interested in bitters bottles, I'm happy to say that they do start pretty low in price, but they skyrocket. For example, the Sarsaparifer, I believe, sold at auction for about $80,000.
Sorry, what?
Yeah. Well, it was one of the Western bitters.
Sorry, an $80,000 bitters bottle?
Mm-hmm. Bitters are some of the most beloved bottles in the bottle collecting sphere.
I love antiques. I hate capitalism.
I hate capitalism, too.
Fuck.
So it's one of those fun ones where there's, like, a huge range in value and rarity, which I find is some of the more fun stuff. There are even bitters bottles that, like, exist on paper but might not exist in reality. We have advertisements from them, but nobody's ever found, like, examples of the bottle.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Bitters cryptids.
Bitters cryptids. It's really... There's way more than I can go into. It's, like, it's a lot. If you want that deep, dark, nitty-gritty knowledge, I recommend For Bitters Only by Carlin Ring and BottlePickers.com.
For Bitters Only is a book, a website, an article...
I'm sorry, For Bitters Only is a book.
Ah.
Specifically about collecting bitters bottles, and it is exhaustive.
Excellent.
It is an excellent place if you want to get serious, if you want to be a little less serious because it is an expensive book. Bottlepickers.com, a little tough to navigate, but if you hit the articles section, they have a lot of incredibly detailed information.
Excellent.
On not just bitters bottles, bottles in general. So those are two places to explore if you want to get into it. You have any questions about bitters bottles?
Nope.
Good. Someone's going to answer them. You can figure it out on your own. Don't want to ask me questions.
Were those your sources?
No, I have more sources.
Okay.
DrLoriV.com, our favorite. Bottlebooks.com, because we have to have one. AntiqueBottles-Glass.com, article titled Bitters Bottles. I would like to thank them from the bottom of my heart for including a section where they detail their, quote, top fantasy bottle. I love that.
One, amazing. Two, from the bottle of your heart?
From the bottle of my heart. The bitter bottle of my heart. CollectorsWeekly.com, the article on bitters bottles. And AntiqueTrader.com, I just did a search tag for bitters bottle.
All of them.
So, like, there's a couple articles. It's all just recaps of auctions. But
nice.
It's fascinating.
Yes. $80,000.
$80,000 for a bottle that once had shitty beer in it.
That's like three times my annual salary.
Mm. Yes.
Fuck. If you would like to talk about bitters bottles, you can email us directly at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com. You can check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/antiquesfreaks. And while you're there, check out the group Antiques Freaks Friends.
There's a lot of really cool people. They make funny jokes. They're very knowledgeable and they help people identify stuff. It is a cool place to hang out.
Yes.
Please do.
Or you can give us your opinion on bitters bottles in the form of a review in your podcasting app.
And stop being mean. I read those sometimes.
Continue being mean. I don't read them.
Be horrible to me. I crave punishment. But reviews are super helpful.
I lied. I do read them.
Yeah, I know you do. We are alike, you and I. We're
both literate.
Oh, my God.
That's what brought us together.
Yeah, I think it was probably the fact that we could read. But yeah, reviews, good or bad, they do a lot to help our visibility on podcast apps. I prefer you leave a good one, but hey, that's just me.
I ain't give a fuck.
Either way, it bumps up the algorithm that says people are talking about this. So if you think other people should be listening to us, do it. Do it.
Do it.
You won't.
Do it, you coward.
Do it.
If you would like to purchase some vintage goods, you can check out our Etsy at etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks. And if you would like to listen to some deleted scenes, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks. And while you are there, you can join the Random Vintage Postcard of the Month Club, where we send you a random vintage postcard every month.
Guaranteed non-alcoholic.
Yes. You cannot drink these postcards.
I advise you not to try.
Special shout out to our current patrons for paying our hosting fees and getting us ever closer to our goal of releasing bonus episodes.
You guys are the best.
And thank you, in particular, for listening.
You. Goodbye.
Bye.